Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. And happy holidays to those of you who celebrate, and however you celebrate this time of year. Even if you're an atheist and don't believe in our Judeo-Christian heritage and culture, this time of year, with the recent passage of the winter solstice here in the Northern Hemisphere, has for thousands of years been a time of recognition of the ending of one geophysical cycle and the beginning of another. It's a time of celebration of renewal and anticipation of new and hopefully better things to come. I wish I could be joining in that celebration of the new year and with it anticipation of better things to come. But after 2 years of bitter disappointments with our rigged and stolen elections, the Marxist revolution we're undergoing, and the frankly terrifying communist Chinese influence and, to a considerable extent, control over our government, both major political parties, our business and financial institutions, and so much of the rest of our society and culture, I don't feel like there's much to celebrate. Besides this, I'm filled with a feeling of dread for what is to come of our country. One thing that should be clear to most Americans by now is that Donald Trump is greatly feared and hated by the cabal of communistic criminals I believe are currently controlling so much of our government. And with their near total control of the mainstream, now largely Marxist media, Wall Street, big business, and so much of the rest of America, as I've said, they are doing everything in their power to destroy Donald Trump and ensure that he is never again president of the United States. I shouldn't have to say this, but just to be completely clear, I am not advocating any type of violence in response to what I see as this accelerating Marxist takeover of the USA. I realize many people don't believe it or aren't aware of it yet, but the signs are all around us. Even before he was removed from office in the coup of 2020, many of our hopelessly corrupt federal and state government institutions were vigorously opposing anything and everything Trump was doing, despite his overwhelming support from the American electorate. This saw its pinnacle of fruition with our rigged and stolen 2020 and now the 2022 elections. To illustrate what I am talking about here, let's look at the 2022 election in Arizona, where, thanks to the corrupt election procedures in Maricopa County, the nation's fourth largest metropolitan area, all the major Trump-backed candidates lost to radical leftists. In response to this, Trump-endorsed gubernatorial candidate Kari Lake filed a lawsuit contesting the governor's election. There was great celebration, speaking of celebrations, among election integrity people over the lawsuit, as it was the first time that any judge had agreed to even look at evidence of election fraud, though the judge in this case narrowed and limited the evidence he would consider. It was widely believed that by pro-life observers that Lake's attorneys demonstrated a clear-cut case that the election was fraudulent. But some of even the most ardent election integrity proponents were not holding out a lot of hope that Lake would ultimately prevail, given the level of easily perceived corruption in Arizona. And after all, those people running and controlling Maricopa's elections have never faced any real negative consequences for their actions. And as I see it, these people are laughing at how they're able to run horribly corrupted elections and get away with it over and over. After a brief but public trial last week, the so-called honorable judge in the case announced he intended to issue a ruling within 5 days. The judge wasted no time. Yesterday, Christmas Eve, he delivered his ruling dismissing Lake's claims and finding no clear and convincing evidence that there was any intentional wrongdoing affecting the election outcome. Here's audio from a December 23 broadcast of Emeril Robinson's The Absolute Truth program on frankspeech.com, in which, before the ruling was handed down, Robinson reviews the Lake case with election integrity activist Patrick Byrne. Play soundbite one, please.
And joining us now is former CEO of Overstock.com, who is also involved at the grassroots level in Arizona regarding the elections. Patrick Byrne, we always love to talk to you, and now is a particularly interesting time because we're seeing one of the first cases on elections actually go to trial and some of the evidence actually be presented. So with what you've watched so far, what do you think are the biggest takeaways in Arizona in the Carrie Lake case?
Well, in a nutshell, and hello, Emerald. Thank you for having me on your show. Greetings from Dublin, Ireland. In a nutshell, it's a dog's breakfast. What we're learning is it's a dog's breakfast. What we've known for 2 years, anyone who's been diving into this, you think your elections have integrity. What we've learned in Maricopa is there is no integrity. There is no chain of title. They'd only count the ballots where the law says they have to count the ballots. They move them and count them there, and there's nothing to keep them from they've acknowledged. There's nothing to keep them. They don't know how many are in the bin when it leaves. It just gets to another place. It gets counted. They have no idea if people are inserting ballots or not. So many things have come out. It turns out they don't have any, it turns out that they printed all this stuff on the wrong size paper. All the paper that was to be used on election day was printed on the wrong size paper. So the machines would reject them. These guys are dancing. They're dancing guys on words. They're saying, well, the ballots weren't rejected because there was something else people could do with it. They could put it in drawer number 3. And so therefore they weren't officially rejected. I mean, all kinds of just word games. It's just clear these government officials have no interest in running a fair election. They're just playing word games and they're running dirty elections. And anyone who could sit through an hour or two of this testimony couldn't tell you anything otherwise.
Yeah, it was very interesting to me on Wednesday. Kurt Olson was questioning Mr. Jarrett about the machine failures. And I think he used a relatively lowball number, 20% of the machines failed. We know that it was likely much higher, upwards of 60%. And yet Mr. Jarrett couldn't really answer the question. He kept dancing around it. Even after the judge had overruled his lawyer saying, objection, Mr. Jarrett still refused to answer the question, though it was a very specific question that he should have been able to answer about the machine failure. They're pretending that this is totally normal, but it's not, Patrick.
They were asking him, would you count this as a disruption? Did this disrupt? He's saying, no, it wasn't a disruption because the machines didn't reject the ballots because there was something else someone could do with them. They could put them in a drawer. Well, the machines did reject the ballots. They were on the wrong size paper. The machines didn't read them. He's making up, and it's 59% of the precincts turned out to have been affected. And he's just saying, well, it doesn't, he's not willing to acknowledge that the fact that in all these precincts, the machines were not reading the ballots. He won't acknowledge it because his way of sort of deflecting it and dancing around it is saying, well, okay, you could put the ballots in the machine and the machines would not get the total from the ballots, but it's not that it's rejecting the paper. It's just not reading it, but it's not disruptive because there's somebody could have put it in drawer number 3. So it doesn't really disrupt anything. It's just double talk. It's just double talk. And no one watching this who's honest-minded could accept that this America, whose brand is elections, turns out to be just a total, pardon me, but we on the farm, we would say a pig's breakfast, just a total slop. It's all mess, has none of the integrity that you would expect, nowhere close.
Here's more commentary on the Lake lawsuit by conservative commentator Dr. Steve Turley. You may be aware there are two Dr. Steve Turleys. One is, I believe, a constitutional law professor, but this is the other one, well-known conservative political commentator. And this is on his YouTube channel, also on December 23. Play soundbite 2, please.
Carrie Lake team, I think, proved ironically through the admission under oath of the vote recorder of Maricopa County that there were no records for how many ballots were originally cast at their drop-off centers. So, boom, chain of custody broken, and therefore you have hundreds of thousands of ballots that are by definition invalid. And then Carrie Lake's legal team found that 48 of the 113 ballots they examined were 19-inch ballots printed on 20-inch paper, which caused them to be rejected by the vote tabulators. And so the size discrepancy is why the tabulators rejected the ballots and why so much chaos ensued on Election Day when a mass number of Kerry Lake's voters came out to vote, which, according to polling and legal experts, cost Kerry Lake the election. As for Katie Hobbs' team, they were an embarrassment. Again, Robert Barnes summed up their case well. They had two witnesses basically perjure themselves. They had the goal to blame voters for voting on Election Day. They actually claimed their lack of record keeping meant no one could prove that there was any impact on the election, what Barnes calls, you can't prove it because we burnt the evidence, right? Defense. And in the end, they basically demanded the court to treat elections as holy rituals beyond all reproach, beyond any criticism or contestation. And that's exactly, by the way, how the legacy media is treating this. The AP already has a headline out that there were no bombshells of the court proceedings. This was all just a waste of time. In other words, they're warning the judge he better rule rightly or his career is over, right? They're just so patently pathetic. This Zelensky media, they're just ridiculous. What this so-called defense suggests to me is how it reveals how corrupt regimes inevitably corrode from within. The corruption is both the means to their power, but also eventually and inevitably, it's the means to their demise. They're so corrupt that they have no defense. And because ideological fidelity, faithfulness to a woke neo-Marxist leftist ideology is their only qualification, they end up amassing people who are often the least qualified to conduct any particular service. And I think you saw that with how that poor excuse for Katie Hobbs' legal team. You could see that they literally had no defense and they were relying on the unflattering media coverage to intimidate this judge. But eventually, this obvious incompetence ends up eroding their power. Corruption corrupts, and there's no way around that. As far as what the judge is going to rule in this case, of course, we're going to have to see. There appears to be three or four options. The judge can overturn the election and hand it over to Kerry Lake. That has recently happened in an election outside of Orlando, Florida, where a town councilman was removed from office by a judge and his challenger was put into office after significant fraud was proven. The second option is to order runoff in Maricopa County. So this would, in effect, nullify the results of the election, call for a do-over, as it were. Again, there's ample legal precedent for that as well across the nation. Or the judge can acknowledge that there were clear shenanigans, but not enough to justify overturning the election. And then again, he could ignore all the evidence and allow what objectively was one of the most pathetic defenses imaginable prevail.
And it was that last option. It looks like that's what the judge did. And you had Turley's spin on it. Well, their corruption is going to ultimately be the means to their own destruction. Really? When's that going to happen? I mean, I do appreciate Dr. Turley. He has some tremendous insights into things, but I don't know. I just find it very hard to come out with anything positive in this horrible mess. As I said, it's interesting to note that Turley, who always tries to portray events in a positive light, acknowledges here that the left-wing propagandists of AP, the so-called news organization known as the Associated Press, also called a wire service, provides news articles for newspapers, electronic news outlets around the country. The Associated Press put out this article claiming Lake essentially had no case and warning the judge in the case to so rule or else his career is over. Looks like that's what he did. If you've heard previous recent broadcasts of my program, you've heard segments of it relating commentary from retired Air Force Lieutenant General and political commentator Thomas, I say McInerney, some people say McInerney. In these sound bites, McInerney is claiming that the CCP has been, that's the Communist Chinese Party, has been waging cyber warfare attacks on our 2020 and now 2022 elections, switching huge numbers of votes from Trump to Joe Biden in 2020 and from Trump back candidates to their opponents in 2022, using a powerful CIA computer program called Scorecard. McKinnity claims these cyber attacks were in addition to widespread ballot fraud in these elections. The problem is McKinnity offers no proof for his claims, as the mainstream media has, in this case, correctly observed. McKinnity contends election audits will reveal this, but where are we going to get one of those when they're always so vigorously opposed by both Democrat and RINO, that is Republican in name only, election officials? The only real forensic audit in the country was held in, ironically enough, Arizona for the 2020 election, but even that was incomplete due to ridiculous tricks and absurd refusal by election officials to provide all the sought-after information. For example, they deleted their entire 2020 election computer database the day before they were required to hand it over to the auditors and got away with it with zero legal accountability. How did this happen? That is what I keep asking myself. Where are the real Americans here? When are we going to see some justice? Here's some audio from yet another commentary of this situation by McInerney, this time in an interview with Connecting the Dots radio show host David, Happel, which was rebroadcast December 12 on Brighteon.com. Here McInerney says at least five U.S. Senate seats were stolen from Trump-endorsed candidates in last month's midterm elections. Play soundbite three, please.
What a world we're living in when we can turn a tsunami, a red wave that was supposed to happen, into a blue ripple and end up right back where we started, and do that in spite of the fact that we've got probably the worst president and the worst policies that we've seen in the entire existence of this country. It's unbelievable that we are where we are, and they seem to have everything so sewed up that we can't do anything about it. Tom, welcome to the program. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you very much for having me, Dan.
It's always wonderful to have you. You and I have become friends over the air in ways that I can't think of anybody that I think more fondly of as a great American patriot.
Well, I think I'm going to surprise you even more today, because Elon Musk is been talking about, but it all points towards the 2020 election, what they did to shape that, which also turns out towards the midterms. And what I'd like to bluntly say, without going back to what we've talked about on the 2020 election being corrupted in those six battleground states, is these midterms, which were supposed to be a red tidal wave, and it didn't turn out that way. But it, in fact, Dan, was a red tidal wave. Now, I have information that says that Baldock up in New Hampshire won. Dr. Oz won. Dr. Oz had 330,000 votes removed using cyber from his score. And, of course, he lost to Fetterman. I mean, look, Fetterman can't even carry on a conversation. So the Democrats knew that they were in a high-risk business by doing that. But they did it anyhow. And Herschel Walker is the big surprise. Herschel actually won, because they removed 111,233, to be exact, votes from his numbers, and he would have beaten Warnock with the 111,233. Going out to Arizona, Blake Masters won. Blake, in fact, beat Mark Kelly. They took 37,506 votes from him. As well as Adam Laxalt. And so that's the five that, at least, that would have shown a red tidal wave. And through corruption on the voting system, and Reuters is going to come out here in the next week with a hit piece on Dennis Montgomery and that, because they're now continuing to try to discredit people. And you know, the one thing they've had, Dan, was they called election deniers. And so anybody who questions an election becomes an election denier, and they demonize them. I am an election denier because I have the hard facts. Mm-hmm. And you'll see why they're now trying to go against my sources. but it's extremely important. Elon, no one is questioning the information that Elon has got. Remember the lawyer he fired on Tuesday, James Baker, was the FBI lawyer who became the repository when Dennis Montgomery became a whistleblower in 2015. He got all the information. I believe he is the source, or I don't know for sure, but probably the source of sending hammer and scorecard to the Chinese Communist Party. And Chinese Communists, Dan, have been manipulating it. Now, they used it down in Brazil against Bonsoro, and they took 5,188,344 votes from Bonsoro and moved them over to Lula. And the important thing is the Brazilian military is taking action on that. The question is, will our military take action and look and see what has been done in both the 2020 election and in the midterms? Will they do an audit? Now, Carrie Lake is fighting a good fight down in your area, and we must support what Carrie has done. Clearly, Katie Hobbs, they took 38,000 votes from Carrie, and she lost by 17,000. So again, they do it close. They nip and tuck it, if you will. But that's why it was not a red tsunami. It, in fact, really was, but due to their cheating, they got these results. Now, it's important that we understand this. And everything that Elon Musk is talking about, Dan, points towards the election, how Twitter was shaping it. But we also know who else, Instagram, Facebook, Apple, YouTube, Google, was doing the same thing. And the weekly meetings that the FBI, DOJ, and elements of the intelligence community, CIA, were meeting with these big tech people. So you know how elaborate it is. We predicted it based on the experience in the 2020 election, how hammer and scorecard has been used still to this day. And I blame the RNC for not Rona McDaniel. I blame Kevin McCarthy and clearly in the Senate, McConnell, for not doing it and opposing it. And it has to be the RNC that challenges these and demands audits. So that's my word. It's good, solid evidence, like what Elon is doing. I think if we could get Elon and Carrie Lake together, that we would have quite a team in the facts, as well as Dennis Montgomery, working together, that we could blow this thing right out of the water. And what you have been doing, such a courageous and magnificent job in telling the American people. So thank you very much, Dan, for letting me come on today.
Well, Tom, it's always a pleasure. But I have to tell you, I've reached out to Carrie Lake. I haven't heard back from her, but I do want to get her connected with so many of the people that we work with jointly, because the theft of the governorship in the state of Arizona, I mean, she was ahead by double digits, and I mean well ahead by like 13 points a week before the election, and somehow she lost. I mean, this doesn't make any sense at all. We've never had a president with the lousy track record that Joe Biden has, and then have the midterms elections turn out the way they did this time. It doesn't make any sense. There's no precedent in our country's history that saw a midterm election have so little change when you had such an unpopular president. It just doesn't make any sense.
It defies logic, Dan, and the smell test. We need that to go against them. And our RNC leadership is not doing it. You are, God bless you, and you're letting people come out with facts. And I have the numbers, in that we've got to get this out. We've got to do audits. And the Democratic Party will not let an audit happen. Look how much money they're doing. But we must, and while Kerry has got this lawsuit going down there, we must support her and let her know that the American people are supporting her and demanding that action be taken, and that an audit on her election down there, particularly in Maricopa County, that it is done there. It'll be so evident. And no longer will you have to use my sources, Nat. Those facts will speak for themselves. So God bless you, Dan. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. Mary's on. Thumper, good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, I made it back. I have a question, if I can, of the general there. Good afternoon, okay. General. Good to see you back. I would like to know if you've been aware of the Brunson Adams case that is sitting at the Supreme Court currently. Are you familiar with that? And if so, what
I'm
are you
aware about? Of it, Thumper. I'm aware of it. I don't know the specifics, but that could be a landmark decision if those facts are presented correctly.
Most people that I've talked to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be very pivotal.
Plus then the House members starting to look into these things and being more aggressive than they are now. None of them have contested these elections. Like Dr. Oz, he should not have. None of them should. They ought to be demanding audits. Well, look, I've got to run, but God bless you. Thanks for what you're doing, Dan.
Well, thank you, Tom. And I have to tell you, what the reason that people are doing what they're doing and not stepping forward is because they get demonized so bad.
Correct.
We've got to quit letting these people control the dialogue, control the agenda. That's how they do it. They attack us for saying things that everybody else knows, and they try to make people afraid. They try to intimidate everybody. And we've got to have a country full of lions instead of a country full of sheep. I am so sick of the Republican, the gutless party, the Republican Party. I think we need to get past this two-party politic crap and finally start electing real leaders. And I don't care what they call themselves. I just care that they have the guts to stand up and protect our country.
And Carrie Lake has that. God bless her. She's standing. Yep. Okay, Dan.
He does. All right. Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you for joining us.
If you've been paying attention to alternative media, you probably are well aware of the Twitter's files, so-called Twitter files revelations, wherein it's been revealed that former members of our intelligence communities have been working with big tech to censor conservative voices and thus help ensure the elections of the Marxist political left candidates. And also there was mention there of Dennis Montgomery. He's supposedly a CIA contractor, civilian contractor for the CIA, who built this powerful supercomputer said to be called the Hammer, and the computer program as well created a computer program called the Scorecard, which is used with it, and which McKinney has said has been turned over. It was developed by this man Montgomery, ostensibly, or at least he was the major producer of it. He currently is under a gag order by a federal judge, I believe, in a lawsuit involving Nevada. But and he's being besmirched. General McKinney there mentions this recent article has now come out from another wire service, Reuters, where they're, dismissing the whole thing about this Hammer scorecard and the significance of it, and saying that a former attorney, I believe, of Montgomery is called Montgomery a fraud and so on and so forth. But it didn't diminish to me one bit. I'd like to know more about it. I understand that Mike Lindell on his website, frankspeech.com, may be producing another documentary involving this whole matter with Hammer and Scorecard, Dennis Montgomery, and so forth. we will see. I hope that comes out. If you were listening closely, you heard General Montgomery also comment that the Brazilian military may intervene in the recent stolen election there, where the leftist former president, Lula da Silva, recently released from prison by his allies on the Brazilian Supreme Court, narrowly won the election there for president of Brazil over the conservative populist incumbent, Jair Bolsonaro. McKinney then wonders if somehow the U.S. military might intervene to investigate and expose corruption in our elections. Though he, again, does not say exactly where he got his information on this electronic vote switching, he alleges, McKinney has, as I said, been calling for real forensic audits of the U.S. election last month, which he believes will show proof of this cyber warfare. Sadly, it all sounds like wishful thinking to me. At the end of the interview, you may also have heard a mention of the U.S. Supreme Court agreeing to initially at least look at the case, the court case Brunson versus Adams, which seeks to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Now, as I understand it, they're contending, these are a group of citizens, so they're brothers, that by Congress's failure to investigate the serious allegations of fraud, the 2020 election, they violated their oath to the Constitution. How it all play out, I don't know, but there's been a number of mentions of it in alternative media. This seems to be getting the hopes up for numerous election integrity advocates that the High Court will actually intervene in the matter. I think they're due to hear a presentation on it and decide if they're going to move further on it in early January. But these people who are so thrilled about this, they still seem to believe in our Supreme Court, it seems. I'm not that, given what they've done so far, not all the members of the court are this way, but I think most of them are. They're ideological leftists, or they, like the people, the three justices that Trump nominated, they've gotten to him somehow. They're compromised. They're frightened. Here's an audio version of an opinion article by law professor Tim Canova on this case, Brunson versus Adams, published on republicbrief.com on December 14. Please play soundbite 4.
Law professor Tim Canova wrote an op-ed recently about a case before the U.S. Supreme Court, which is yet to get much notice. Canova wrote that a ruling in this case by the High Court could have a major impact, even going as far as overturning the national 2020 election. The case of Brunson v. Adams, not even reported in the mainstream media, was filed pro se by ordinary American citizens, Canova wrote. Here is Canova's cred according to his bio. Canova is a professor of law and public finance at NSU Shepherd Broad College of Law, with broad experience in law teaching, private practice, and public policy. Tim teaches constitutional law too, First Amendment law, corporations, business entities, regulation of financial institutions, and a seminar on law, finance, and markets at Nova. Our friends at Gateway Pundit have an incredible, perfectly constructed guest post by Canova on the subject, as he examines the case, the possible motives for it, and the possible outcome. While there has been much public attention on the U.S. Supreme Court's present consideration of the independent state legislature theory in Moore v. Harper involving North Carolina's redistricting, that case would not immediately upend the 2020 presidential election. In contrast, a little-known case that appeared recently on the court docket could do just that. The case of Brunson v. Adams, not even reported in the mainstream media, was filed pro se by ordinary American citizens, four brothers from Utah, seeking the removal of President Biden and Vice President Harris, along with 291 U.S. representatives and 94 U.S. senators who voted to certify the electors to the Electoral College on January 6, 2021 without first investigating serious allegations of election fraud in half a dozen states and foreign election interference and breach of national security in the 2020 presidential election. The outcome of such relief would presumably be to restore Donald Trump to the presidency. The important national security interests implicated in this case allowed the Brunsons to bypass an appeal that was frozen at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Tenth Circuit and get the case to the Supreme Court, which has now scheduled a hearing for January 6, 2023. The Brunson petition for a writ of certiorari would require the votes of only four justices to move the case forward. It seems astounding that the court would wade into such waters 2 years to the day after the congressional vote to install Joe Biden as president. But these are not normal times. Democrats may well push legislation in this month's lame duck session of Congress to impose term limits and a mandatory retirement age for justices, and thereby open the door to packing the court. Such a course would seem to be clear violations of Article 3, Section 1 of the Constitution, which provides that justices shall hold their offices during good behavior. In addition to such institutional threats to the Supreme Court, several justices and their families have been living under constant threats to their personal security since the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Perhaps these institutional and security threats have provided powerful incentives for the court to put Brunson v. Adams on its dockets as a shield to deter any efforts by the lame duck Congress to infringe on the court's independence. Or perhaps conservatives on the court are serious about using the Brunson case as a sword to remove public officials who they believe have violated their constitutional oaths of office by rubber-stamping electors on January 6 without first conducting any investigation of serious allegations of election fraud and foreign election interference. Moreover, recent weeks have brought a cascade of news suggesting the likelihood of an impending constitutional crisis that could be difficult to resolve without the court's intervention. It is now clear that the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, was colluding with social media giants Twitter and Facebook to censor news of Hunter Biden's laptop in the weeks leading up to the 2020 election, a most egregious First Amendment violation intended to rig the election outcome and perhaps to install an unaccountable and criminal puppet government. Meanwhile, the January 6 committee may soon send a criminal referral to the Justice Department to arrest President Trump, even though his reinstated tweets are a reminder that he was not calling for insurrection but for peaceful protest on January 6. More recently, the Department of Homeland Security Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, was reportedly working with big tech to censor election critics. Supreme Court justices may well see these approaching storm clouds and conclude that the court's intervention is necessary to prevent larger civil unrest resulting from constitutional violations that are undermining public trust and confidence in the outcomes of both the 2020 and 2022 elections. When criminals break the law, state and federal statutes, to rig an election, we are dependent on prosecutions by law enforcement agencies that have sadly become politicized and complicit. When they break the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, the final recourse may be the Supreme Court. As the Brunson lawsuit argues, all of Congress was put on notice prior to its January 6 vote by more than 100 of its own members detailing serious allegations of election frauds and calling for creation of an electoral commission to investigate the allegations. Moreover, the Office of Director of National Intelligence, ODNI, was required to submit a report on foreign threats to the 2020 presidential election by December 18, 2020. That deadline was set by executive order and by Congress itself. When December 18 came and went without ODNI submitting its report, Congress should have started asking questions and investigating. In fact, DNI John Ratcliffe announced on that day that the 17 U.S. intelligence agencies he was overseeing had found evidence of foreign election interference but were split as to its significance and whether such breach of national security was sufficient to overturn the outcome of the election. And yet there was no action whatsoever by Congress, no inquiry and no investigation. Instead, Congress approved the possibly fraudulent election results on January 6 without asking any questions of the DNI and the intelligence community. When the results of the 1876 presidential election were in doubt, Congress created a special electoral commission made up of 5 House members, 5 senators, and 5 Supreme Court justices to investigate. In contrast, in early 2021, Congress had nearly 2 weeks to investigate before the January 20 date of the presidential inauguration. Had Congress waited even just one more day, they would have received the long-awaited ODNI report reflecting a split in the intelligence community and the DNI's own conclusion that the People's Republic of China had interfered to influence the outcome of the presidential election. As Dr. Barry A. Zulauf, the analytic ombudsman for the intelligence community, concluded at the time, the intelligence community shamefully delayed their findings until after the January 6 Electoral College certification by Congress because of their political disagreements with the Trump administration. This paints a picture of collusion and conspiracy involving members of Congress and U.S. intelligence agencies to cover up evidence of foreign election interference and constituting the crime of high treason. The Brunson lawsuit does not claim the election was stolen, merely that a large majority of Congress, by failing to investigate such serious allegations of election rigging and breaches of national security, violated their oaths to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, an oath also taken by Supreme Court justices and members of the U.S. military.
Perhaps the Supreme Court will intervene. Wouldn't that be amazing? Yeah. As I've said before, given the all but total refusal of our judiciary, right up to a majority of our Supreme Court justices, to even look at the massive evidence of fraud in our recent elections, I'm amazed that so many of our election integrity activists still believe our courts will ultimately intervene to save the republic. It's been speculated, by the way, that the Supreme Court is merely using the Brunson case to dissuade the lame duck Democrat-dominated Congress from passing legislation to limit Supreme Court justice terms and eventually allow the left to pack the Supreme Court with their chosen people. This would be dangerously short-sighted, in my opinion, and even stupid, but what else is new? Since future, most likely, communist-controlled Democrat and rhino and or rhino Congresses and presidents will approve such laws anyway. Unfortunately, I believe the three Trump-nominated justices are also CCP compromised one way or another and will not vote to intervene to save our republic in this matter. That is Brunson v. Adams. Therefore, I expect a majority of the high court will vote not to formally hear the Brunson case. But as I've also said before, I'd sure love to be proven wrong. Lastly today, here's audio from an interview with former CIA agent and political commentator Sam Faddis on the CCP's infiltration of America. This was on NTD Television's China in Focus program, December 22nd. On another alternative media program recently, Faddis stated that he considers Joe Biden, whose family has undisputedly received tens of millions of dollars in payments from individuals and entities associated with the CCP, that is the Chinese Communist Party, and Chinese military intelligence. Faddis considers Biden, Joe Biden, a controlled asset of the CCP. Please play soundbite 5.
Chinese infiltration in the U.S. Experts say Beijing's influence efforts involve people in positions of power. We sat down with Sam Faddis, retired CIA officer and senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, to find out more. Here's his take on how the Twitter files about the Biden family reveal major concerns happening on home soil.
The Chinese Communist Party engages in a practice of elite capture. They put an immense amount of energy and incredible numbers of resources into targeting countries that are important to them. We'd be at the top of that list, and turning the elite in those countries to their will. This is not science fiction. This is all day, every day on an industrial scale. They have made a lot of progress in that regard in the United States, as sad as that is. We have a lot of people in positions of power that in one way or the other now are inclined to help Beijing against the interests of Washington, D.C. And that is sick, and it's horrifying to say, and yet that's reality. That's where we are.
And Sam, how do we defend against that, seeing as what the Twitter files seem to show is this lack of free speech happening in America? How do we then defend against an adversary that has captured our elite?
Well, look, to start with, we have to say out loud what I'm saying now, okay? Elite capture is not an unknown concept. You can go online and research this and find that the American intelligence community talks about this and defines this and recognizes it. You've got a guy running for president in terms of Joe Biden in 2019 who has taken tens of millions of dollars from people with direct connections to the CCP and Chinese intelligence. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to say, this is a big problem and we should probably get to the bottom of this because maybe these guys are buying themselves the Oval Office. And yet our number one counterintelligence agency, the FBI, has acted for 3 years now like it can't see this, like it's not obvious that this should have been a critical burning priority to investigate. You shouldn't have been burying it. You should have been saying, good Lord, Is it possible we might be having a guy sit down in the Oval Office who answers to Xi Jinping? Because if so, we better find out right now. And instead, they've gone the other direction. So first step, let's just talk about it and recognize it and do our jobs. Let's find out what did and did not happen.
And Sam, on that note, with the new Congress coming in January, do you see any steps being taken in that direction, or where do you see this going?
Well, there are definitely going to be positive steps, right? We're going to have hearings. We're going to have a House under Republican control. The question, and this on every American's mind, is, okay, will anything actually happen after the hearings are done and the theatrics and the speeches? Is anybody going to jail here? Will there be a result? And this, I think, is the unanswered question, right? Do we still have accountability, or is this all, at the end of the day, we're going to sweep it under the rug? We don't know the answer yet.
And Sam, it seems President Biden has just started this thing called the China House, and I think it's being led by Rep Gallagher. So with this kind of focus on China, what steps do you see happening there? Are we going to see change?
No. The China House is more typical Washington theater, right? They've given a new name to a section in the Department of State, which I think has a grand total of 70 people working in it. Okay, we changed a name and an office symbol. That's all we did. Meanwhile, the same president who wants you to focus on this shut down Donald Trump's China initiative, which was focused on rooting out Chinese intelligence officers and stopping them from stealing everything that's not nailed down in the United States. So the first thing Joe did when he walked in the Oval Office was shut down this initiative to get control of Chinese intelligence. And now we're supposed to think that 70 people sitting in an office in the Department of State will make a difference. No, it's meaningless. It's window dressing. It's all theater for PR.
And Sam, zooming out to the national security implications, what does this mean for the average American? How is this impacting their life?
Let's be clear, right? We're not talking about the Chinese people. We're talking about the Chinese Communist Party. It's an existential threat to the United States. They intend to supplant us as the dominant military, political, and economic power on the planet. They are well down the road. And one of the ways they're doing that is by buying huge numbers of Americans in a whole variety of ways to work for them. Again, some of those are formal assets. Some of those are just folks who are making a lot of money from doing business in China and therefore don't want to rock the boat. They run the gamut. And part of the hard part of the challenge here is that if you want to start going through the top people in both political parties, both major political parties, you're going to find a lot of them on both sides of the aisle up to their eyeballs in contacts with the CCP. A lot of them on both sides do not want to rock this boat because they're getting rich off of it.
Sam, speaking of that, it seems we are seeing that in terms of, say, lobbyists for Huawei or TikTok. They come from both parties, like Trump's and Biden's. So how can the average American try and protect their own country then? What can be done?
Well, what they have to demand is they have to demand concrete action. This probably applies to every issue, right? When back to the China initiative, the Chinese are running rampant in our universities and corporations, stealing the high technology that we rely upon to give us a military advantage to win a future war. They're robbing us blind. The very first thing this administration did was shut down our efforts to get control of that and cut and basically turn them loose to loot the place again. Now, how many, just an average American, how many senators of both parties have you heard discuss that since Joe Biden sat down? How many of them are screaming bloody murder about? Almost none. They're acting like they can't see it and they can't have it. So back to the American people, you got to demand action. This isn't about rhetoric. This is about what you're going to do for us. You got to change something or we're going to turn around and lose a war to the communist Chinese.
Speaking of the potential kinetic war, it seems the Chinese regime has already been at war with us through other means, right? Cyber, legal warfare, all these different types. So Is there anything we can do now? What are the steps to make sure we don't lose this next war?
Well, listen, I think if you really want to get to the heart of the issue here, we made a strategic decision decades ago now to become economically entangled with a totalitarian communist state, right? Think about our confrontation with the Soviet Union. Did we ever contemplate for a second climbing in bed with Stalin's Soviet Union? Or we would have never considered such a thing, right? And yet we made that decision, and that's the heart of the issue, right? If you really want to get back to it, you cannot keep enriching the Chinese Communist Party.
And Sam, given the economic and financial entanglements, what would that look like then to solve that? Is it complete decoupling, or what are the steps there?
It's pretty close to complete decoupling. Now, is it possible for the United States of America to announce tomorrow we are decoupling from communist China after decades without dire economic repercussions? Obviously not. You can't do that. We are not in a position to do that. What you could do is make a strategic decision that we are moving away from this relationship. And then in stages over a course of years, you could begin to decouple. Some of that industry will come home. Some of it will go to friendly nations that do not pose a threat to us. In the end, maybe it doesn't mean we don't buy anything from communist China, but it certainly means that we throttle dramatically back on the relationship. Now, think of all the Americans who are making billions of dollars a year off of the current status quo. Every one of those entities, starting with people like Amazon, will, of course, say, there's no way we want to go down this road because we're making more money than God off of dealing with the Chinese communists. So they will fight tooth and nail. But look, I think the average American, honestly, as a matter of common sense, understands this thing is not working to our long-term advantage. We're ultimately going to lose if we keep on this course.
And Sam, given everything that's at stake, not just for the American people, but also the Chinese people, any last words you'd like to add?
Well, look, for both of them, for the Americans and the Chinese, it is critical that we recognize this and make the decisions. Because the lie that we were making the Chinese people freer and leading to democratization by going down this road should be evident to everybody. All we did was make the CCP much more powerful and much more capable of building now a high-tech prison camp for 1.4 billion people. So we're not helping anybody by doing what we're doing now.
For the most part, in the past, when totalitarian communist states have taken over a nation and its people, it's been through violent military action in revolution or war. But if you've been following reports from the West on the CCP, you know they have a longstanding plan to take over America and the rest of the West through essentially nonviolent subversion, using bribery, blackmail, and other means to capture, as you heard, our elites, which they are doing and have done very well. This would, or should I say will, allow them to preserve our infrastructure and resources for their own use. It's only too obvious, as you just heard Fattah say, they are well along in this planned conquest. Whether or not it's already too late to prevent a complete CCP takeover will become evident in the near future, I strongly suspect. That's a wrap for another show. As always, we hope you found the content of interest and value. I wish you could have been more positive today, but that's how I see things. You can listen to a podcast of the show when it's posted shortly on the Jim Benson Show pages at bbsradio.com. Look for another live show 2 weeks from now in this same time slot. Have a good rest of your day and evening.